Blog Talk Radio.
On Wheels Now.
Welcome to On Wheels Now, your inside look at local motorsports, live from Las Vegas. Welcome to the show. We have a great show for you tonight. Guest with us is Pat Petrie, modified driver for LVMS and Lucas Oil Modifieds with H-Town Racing. Thanks for joining us tonight.
No problem. Thanks for having me, you guys.
The only thing I got to say is I'm sorry you got a Denver Broncos hat on.
Don't be sorry.
I'm just kidding.
Don't be sorry.
Hey, thanks for joining us. Of course, hosting tonight, the one and only JJ Nunn.
Good evening.
What's happening, man?
Not much.
I started with Pat tonight instead of you.
Yeah, that's okay. We welcome Pat all the time. Glad he's here in the studio.
Denver you Broncos know. Hat or not, hey.
That's okay.
You're welcome.
Well, his origin is Denver.
There you go.
That's why I root for the Jets and the Mets.
Oh,
and the Islanders.
Yeah,
look at the Islanders.
Yeah.
From him. All of a sudden, I did make Pat feel bad wearing a Denver.
No, I don't feel bad wearing a Bronco hat if you're a Jets fan. That's for sure.
That's okay. Gary's got a L.A. Kings jacket on, so.
That's right.
Speaking of that, the man always on a mission hosting tonight also, Gary Wyatt.
How you guys doing?
What's happening, man?
Thanks for being here, Pat.
No problem. Thanks for inviting me.
So,
hey, before we get started with Pat.
Okay.
I need to say that 5 years ago today was what?
Was it as of today?
I didn't do it. She said she was 21.
You're going to go there, right?
I didn't do it. It wasn't me.
Yeah, actually.
Yes, it is.
Was it today as of today? Really?
Five years ago today.
Haven't shaken you guys since.
What was 5 years ago?
Well, the show originally started 5 years ago in November of last year, but you guys came on and been on ever since.
See?
Five years ago. Yeah.
See, 5 years.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up.
One of your biggest mistakes.
And he kicks Jesse in the butt every time.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We don't have a cake or anything or no giveaways for you, but we do have a great show for you tonight with Pat Petrie.
That's right.
Oh, man. Speaking of that, Pat, how you been, man? I mean, has it been an off season for you? I know some people have off seasons, but.
Well, there's really, we try to take a little downtime around the holidays, but been helping a friend of mine with his dirt car. We ran a couple races with that. And he has a new car that we put together. And so he did been doing that, plus getting all our stuff lined up and ready for next year. And, the modifieds, our last race was, mid-November at the Bullring. Right. So on our first time we hit the tracks, February 11th at Kern County. So there's really not a lot of downtime.
Yeah.
So
we'll get to that.
3.5 months.
Three and a half months.
And throw in three holidays.
Well, exactly. And, and then depending on when you actually work on your car or not, them hours go quick.
We were discussing before the show, between family and work and then racing, there's no time, very little time to sleep.
Well, if you ask Gary, there's only one of those that matter. That's racing. Racing first, family second. If the real family, they'll follow you, right?
They'll understand.
But hey, you said you helped your buddy with a dirt car?
Good friend of mine, this kid, his name is Justin Miller. I've known him since, I've known his mom and dad for forever. And matter of fact, I won the championship in the Outlaw Stocks or late models, or whatever they were calling them that year. I actually drove the car for Justin's dad, Kirk, and it was their car. So,
wow.
So Justin He played in the Bomber a little bit way back when, and then he got a pavement modified, and he didn't like that so much. And so he's been running on the dirt. This, I think, it's third full season, maybe third.
Wow.
Third
so,
he, year
so he's liking the dirt, huh?
Yeah. He we went to Paris. He put together a new car. I helped him a little bit, but the first time he took it out, he finished second in the heat and sixth in the main at Paris. And there's probably 25 cars down there when we went. So good competitive field. And yeah, it was fun.
You said you helped them out. Did you try to help out with like setup? I mean, you know, you're not coming from dirt, so you're just like an extra hand. Okay.
No, just
totally different beast, correct?
Yeah, it's totally. It's that car. You know, he bought a new car and it's really nice, and we're helping bolt it together, and it's completely the opposite.
And you're looking at the suspension.
Yeah, it's completely opposite of what we have, but. You know, I help him as much as I can, you know, tuning on the motor. Well, he runs a crate motor, so there's not a lot you can do. But, you know, just whatever he needs help with. And, you know, his mom and dad, and they have a sign business out in Henderson, a First Impression sign company. And,
cool.
And they been pretty helpful, you know, as far as helping me with stuff I need all years now. So
with graphics.
Yeah, so like it's nice. I can return the favor a little bit. And
sweet.
Justin also, you know, whenever he can, he crews for me. He spots for me. He does whatever he can at the pavement races as well. So,
is he full time in the IMC?
They run a ton of races. I don't know what his schedule is. I know he's planning on trying to go run this weekend if it doesn't rain everywhere, and probably can run 40 or 50 times in a season and pick and choose where he wants to go.
That's what's nice about the IMC package. So. They run that just about everywhere. So,
you know, I go with him and I like it and it's fun. And then I say, you know, this might be fun. And then,
right.
Then I think about it for a little while. I'm like, oh, you know, dirt's
just more.
Yeah. You know,
more.
I know I'm too old to relearn everything. So, you know, I've been around the pavement way too long to try to relearn anything on the dirt. So
and when you say old, you're not saying nothing new around here.
Yeah. I might be the youngest one either.
Well, exactly. I think so.
Yes, you are. That ain't saying much.
Yeah, we got you outnumbered.
Yeah.
Have you ever run on the dirt?
Yeah.
Anything at all?
No, yeah, I ran about three full seasons on the dirt. I ran when they first opened LVMS. They ran on the half mile. I ran the Thunderstock on the half mile. At first, we ran on the big track, and then they moved us to a littler track that they built kind of in the infield and on the front straightaway.
Okay.
We had like a 66 Chevelle that I ran over there. And then I did run a modified a couple times over there, and it was a pavement car I had that we tried to run over there, and that didn't work out well. And then I had a coupe. I ran a Pahrump the first 2 years I had the coupes.
Yes, that's right.
So,
I forgot about the coupe.
Did you guys run out there the same time?
Yeah.
Pat ran?
Well, the coupe thing was when we got into that, you know, my dad, the background with my dad, you know, running – starting in the mid 60s, you know, and everything they ran were those like 32 Fords and 32 Vicks. And when they started to run those coupes, I just kind of fell in love with the thing because it looked like my dad's cars did. You know, so
the jalopies.
We did get one, and we ran it quite a bit. Did won a bunch of races with it. I mean, we had 10, 12 cars the first year most of the time, and it just wasn't growing. And the whole thing kind of at that time, it was, you know, they're trying to get it started, and I just ended up getting rid of it and going back to the pavement.
Right. Yeah, I wish those things grew. I know there was like a company out of Texas that originally started them or something. And
yeah, right after I think right after they started running them here, that company kind of went away, and then Donnie Berger
took it over,
built them for a long time, and still might be involved with them. But they're really the only place they run them is at Pahrump.
Right.
We ran when we had it. We ran it Tonopah. We ran it Mojave. We ran it Pahrump with it. It was fun.
It was just. Too bad that they're not as big as, you know, as they used to be, or not growing, because those are almost like a IMCA type package. They're like a spec dirt car.
Well, they were. I don't know, you know, what they've evolved to over the years, but you know, when we first started running them, they were 305s, they're automatics. You didn't run a 9-inch in them. They were metric 10-bolt rear ends.
Yeah.
You know, so they're.
Very
they were basically a glorified kind of a street stock with a coupe body on it kind of thing with some big tires. But they were fun. It was a fun car to drive.
We were going to try to get those out here at the Bowl.
That's right. Didn't
they did hot lap them. They did hot lap them.
Were you a part of that?
We were out there, but we didn't. I think you know, there's a few guys who hot lapped him out there, and we weren't one of them, but we were kind of looking at him, and it's kind of what sparked our interest. But, you know, I can say hands down the fun. I've driven, you name it, and I've driven it, except for probably a legend car, and I would if I could fit in one. But I've driven a Bomber, a Thunder Roadster, Super Stock, Street Stock, Hobby Stock, Modified, Super Lates, you name it. And by hands down, the Modified on the pavement is the funnest thing I've driven.
Wow.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Well, and,
yeah.
And actually, you've stuck with that for a while now. Since
it's what I love.
It.
You know, the Modified is, you know, all that horsepower and no tire. And, you know, it takes some finesse to figure them out. And I don't have quite what I need to have finesse like to do it, but you know,
well, or finesse means some more dollar bills, right?
Well, you know, they got the motors that we have, you know, they're so much horsepower already that, you know, it's hard to get them all hooked up. But the thing is, you know, maybe 20 years ago, but now you got these kids, you know, these young kids, like, you know, you have Vinny last year and Peyton and these, some of these younger kids.
A lot more aggressive.
They have no fear. I don't know if it's right. No fear or no smarts yet. I haven't learned their lesson.
Probably a little of both because they haven't hit the wall yet.
You know. But,
I think we all have here at one
to keep
point.
Up with those guys, you know. They're, you know, those kids, you know, I don't know. They both started probably, you know, in Bandoleros and Legends. And, you know, they're 18, 19, 20 years old. And I've already 10, 12 years experience.
Right.
Which is, it's good. You know, we need that in the sport.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, to keep the growth. But,
you know, that's some of the difference. Like, some of us didn't get into racing, except for maybe street racing or something, until later on in our years, where some of these guys, they get into these cars when they're not even teens yet.
Well, you can, Aaron McMoran, his son's been racing go-kart now,
right,
I think, for 2 years, and he started when he actually practicing it when he was four. You know, started running when he's five, and you know the kids. I think he's six now, seven maybe. You know, he's probably won 50 feature events already.
Is that
you
crazy?
Know, in a go kart.
Wow.
So,
and he just won a go kart.
Yeah, and he won a go kart for winning the championship. By the time that kid's 10, he'll have won more races than everybody in this room plus his dad combined.
Right.
You know.
Exactly.
So,
I remember Vinny Rucci Jr. coming around the pits at 5 years old. We're talking 16 years ago when. You know, when he got into Bombers,
right.
I would say about 13 years ago, he was 5, 6 years old.
That's
the kids
crazy.
Are brought up around racing, you know.
Yeah.
Well,
and if they hound mom and dad long enough, they're going to get into a car.
Well, now, you know, when I first started, I think you had to be, I know you couldn't drive until you were 16. It might have even been a little bit, like for a super late, it might have even been a little bit older. But, you know, now they have, you know, the go-karts are at 5, quarter midgets are at 5, the bandos are at 8, you can be in a legend car at 12. Mm-hmm. They have the junior 8 model series that they run in Madera that, you know, they have these kids that are 10 years old driving full-size late models. At 14, you can run a modified on the Lucas series or at the Bullring. And, you know, so the age has creeped down. And
right, it used to be 16, like you said, and then a lot of divisions have moved to 14 and just crazy.
Yeah, so you can pretty much be in a car from, you know, you start school and get your first race car the same day.
Yeah, 5 years old. It's kindergarten.
Yeah.
Write your name, and now we're going out to work on your go-kart.
Right.
Oh, man. I wish wish we all had that back in the day, right?
Oh, back in the day, yeah. Everybody would have enjoyed that, you know, 5 years old and go play with a go-kart. Why not?
Well,
you know,
I've been around race cars since the day I was born in the garage with my dad and climbing on them and working on them and getting in the way. And
but even back like then, you're like, your dads weren't thinking of you getting in a race car at 5, I wouldn't think.
No.
Like, hey, when you get old enough, you earn this.
Yeah, they had quarter midgets. I remember them having quarter midgets, but I don't know if they started at 5 back then, quarter midgets. But, you know, I know when my dad first started at one track, there's two tracks in Colorado, Inglewood Speedway and Lakeside Speedway, and I might be a little off, but I think at Lakeside you had to be like 21, and at Inglewood you had to be 18. So he started it, even though he wanted to run at the one closer, which was Lakeside Speedway. He ran to Inglewood and actually had to fudge some paperwork. He started when he was 17, but you know he was supposed to be 18, and then the next year they moved the age back to 18 at the other track, so he went over there and ran. But those days, you know, 18, 21, before you could start.
And those were asphalt tracks?
Yeah, right, those were both.
You've always just been around asphalt.
Well,
yourself,
my,
for the most part.
Well, yeah, my, well, I have some family that is pretty big and did well on dirt. My dad got involved because he had an older cousin that was several years older than him that ran midgets, some dirt midgets all over Colorado and some national USAC races and won quite a few regional and championships and stuff like that. He actually got killed in a crash with in a midget car in 1977.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, I was a little kid, but he was a year-round kind of racer, and he had wrecked and had broke his back. And they decided to get back in the race car way too soon. So he decided he was going to race this midget race, and he couldn't tighten his seatbelt up because his back was healed, and he left him really loose and then got upside down, barrel rolled it down the straightaway. And that basically the seatbelts were just hooked together. They really weren't holding in the car. So
yeah, that's good. That's bad, but it's good for a reminder for all of us. You know, we take it for granted, the safety equipment we have today. You know, make sure it's working properly, you know.
Tuck them down.
Anything can happen. That's everything.
Well, it was a different mentality in those days. Yeah. I remember even my dad's cars that I can remember when I was a kid, you know, they had a lap belt in them. The shoulder harness they wore, like, wrapped around their body and just clipped with, an eye clip on the roll bar. You know, they wore open-face helmet, and they had no windshields, no bars or nothing in front of them, and they had a fuel tank, not a fuel cell. They, you know, there's pictures of my dad, you know, with his cigarettes rolled up in his white t-shirt, his white pants, and his open face helmet. And
I can picture that. In every magazine. Right?
Caution flags, and they'd light up their cigarette and be puffing it on the
yellow flag
glass, you know. Yeah, that's you know, there's pictures of my dad's arm resting on his gas tank with a cigarette in his hand in the race cars. So.
That's cool. That's the respect them guys deserve for racing the way they did and the cars that they did back then, and kind of paving the way for race cars today.
Leather football helmet.
Yeah.
How many pictures have you seen with the leather football helmet? You know, you see a Tim Flock and Fonty Flock, and they got leather football helmets on.
You're talking about your old helmets, aren't you?
You know, Herb Thomas, you know.
I remember a story my dad told me. There was a guy who used to come around, and he was an older guy when I was a kid, and he raced midgets before they even had roll cages or seat belts in them, you know. So the idea was if it started to roll over, either tucked down or flew out.
Yeah.
And he had a wooden helmet, had leather straps that held it on.
That's
and crazy. He actually had his ear. He had flipped the midget and fell out, and a car ran over his head. And when it ran over the top of his head, it twisted the helmet. The leather strap cut his ear off. And then he jumped up and ran to the infield before the next car could hit him. And he had a story. He got his ear ripped off because he got ran over by a race car. So, yeah, pretty crazy. And they didn't think nothing of it in those days. This is how it was.
Oh, man.
What was it? There was no EMTs at the track.
No.
I mean, a doctor or a nurse out of the stands.
Right, anybody?
Yeah. That track my dad raced at was a fifth mile, and they would run those modifieds in the 70s. Those, you know, they were kind of an upright car with a coupe body on them, but they were pretty racy, you know, horsepower, big slicks and stuff on them. They were in the low 12-second lap times around
that
place.
Crazy.
And they would run 100-lap main event on that track for some bigger shows, and they'd start 25, 30 cars, and they started, fastest cars started dead last, slowest cars on the pole.
Yeah.
And those cars had no power steering, no power brake.
Muscled the thing,
you know,
for 100 laps.
By the time they were done, you know, they couldn't even lift their arms up, you know. So they were, it was not a convenience for sure.
Those are true athletes, trust me.
I don't know. I think they were just crazy.
All right, we'll call them crazy.
Yeah.
You know, the love of racing. You know, if you're an adrenaline junkie, you're going to get out there. I mean, we spoke about generations. You know, you go back with, like, Pat's dad all the way back across the South and everything. It's nothing unusual that they ran 100 laps without power steering, muscle in a car. I get exhausted after 25 laps with power steering these days.
Yeah.
You know, it's Ironman racing.
Yeah, but my dad decided he wanted to run back in the 2000, 2001, we got him that hobby stock. It had power steering on it. He hated it. He's like, take that. We had to take it off. So he wouldn't even run it at the bullring with it. He's like, you know, I can't feel what the car's doing. I don't like
right.
it.
You hear that a lot.
He was just
that,
used
yeah.
to it. So he ran the car there with no power steering on it. So just because that's what he wanted. So.
Well, you do hear a lot of that where the guys don't want, you know, the power steering because you can't feel the car and all that. So, you know, and I agree, I guess, to some degree.
Old school is old school.
That's right.
Well, with the modified, you have a quick steer with those. So it's
yeah,
you really turn the
well, we run too much. We run a really quick box on the modifieds.
Right.
You know, some guys run, you know, you can run a 6-to-1 or 8-to-1 compared to, you know, like a standard 12-to-1 or whatever. For a long time, you know, when I first got my modifieds, we just put a quickener in the column
right.
with the stock ratio box. But now, you know, we can run those other boxes. So we have pretty quick steering in them. So.
Do you see a difference in when you first started getting into the modifieds till today? Have they changed the rule?
I remember, the first cars we had, you know, compared to what we have now, there's absolutely no comparison.
Right.
And just the technology and what people have learned. And I found a printout, I don't know, 7-8 months ago from one of the Fall Classic races at the Bullring. And it was, might have been like 2006, 2000, I can't remember exactly when it was from. And I think Donald Williams was running his modified at the time. And like quick time for that weekend was like a 16:30. Mm-hmm. In the modifieds. This last Fall Classic, last November, the pole was a 14.80 something.
Unbelievable.
Maybe a little 14.9.
Yeah.
To get in the show, we were the last, didn't qualify in. We got in on a provisional,
mm-hmm.
but we were the last car that didn't qualify in, and we were like a 15.59.
Wow.
And that wasn't in the top 22. So
is that crazy?
Yeah.
Most of the cars are probably within, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Two, three, four,
the majority, if I think there was 8 or 9 cars in the O's, you know,
wow.
and then a few in the ones and a few twos, threes,
yeah.
so on and so forth. But they can't sustain that. You can't run that lap after lap
no,
in the main event. But they, you know, they're unbelievable. You know, 1480s quicker, you know, than a lot of the super late models were running.
And
so,
that's unheard of, right?
You know,
compared.
Well, with 05, 06, our fast time was 21 seconds. Come back 7 years later. Last year, Sam Jacks cut what? 18.9.
Right.
You know, go to 19. It, 2 seconds,
yeah.
2 seconds difference in
right.
bombers right there, you know. Just with rule changes, you know, and we didn't have a weight limit. Now we got a weight.
Right.
You know, the thing about the modifieds that I think has changed the most is, you know, the I'm a big guy. I'm 290 pounds nowadays, and I still have lead bolted on my car to get it to the minimum weight of 2,500 pounds. So these kids, you know, Peyton, Saxton, and some of the smaller kids, there's 250 pounds of lead in these cars to get them up to weight. So the cars are so much lighter. The shock packages, you know, the suspension stuff we run, we're still not on a good tire. So I think, you know, if the modifieds were on like the super late tire, it'd be scary,
it
you know, how fast
scary.
They would actually be. But, you know, there's a lot of smart guys out there working on this stuff year round to make these things a lot smarter than I am to make these things faster, you know. So on these chassis and changing and testing and trying this and trying that and it just you just see it creep down. And we really haven't had any real significant rule changes since I've been running the Lucas Oil series and the Bullring adopted, you know, they just run the Lucas Oil rules package.
Right.
One of the things I think that's kind of smart by the series is they don't do any drastic rule changes.
Right.
They tweak things here and there and clarify stuff. But, you know, that's part of the reason the car counts stay up because big rule changes cost money.
And
so
chase,
no matter what you do. So,
chases people away.
You know, so you make a big motor change or a big change somewhere on a rule and it just is hard for people to do. So I think that's one of the reasons. So the rules haven't really changed that much. A lot of it has been technology and fine tuning and just figuring things out. So
well, and I noticed that's when their rule changes would come into play is when the technology changes start coming into play also, like the shock rules have been tweaked a little because of the technology and shocks over the last few years.
Yeah,
I know.
You know, there's some things that couple of things that'd be nice, and I don't know if it'll ever happen. One of the things that in our series that makes it difficult is, you know, we're not allowed, like IMCA mod, you can run a quick change rear end.
Yeah.
Well, in the Lucas cars, you can't. So we run the Ford 9-inch, but when you travel to a bunch of different tracks.
100% agreed.
You know,
they could have a quick change rear
end. You know, so that might, they've talked about that a little bit. They've also talked about going to a fabricated front clip because the clip they're trying to work with, it's been in talks for a couple of years, is and it still has all the stock mounting points on it.
Right.
But in order to find a straight stock front clip and then work it and trim it and weld it and get it ready to put on the car, you know, I know when Bray does them for our cars, you have hours in a clip to put it on the car, you know, so that's an expense, and then you have to find them. So,
point of this.
Well, if you have a fabricated front clip, you know, you can build a few in a day in a jig, no problem, and
right.
Weld them on a car. And that's not something they're willing to go to yet. And they've talked about it a little bit, so I imagine the next few years you might see that just because it's hard to find find the stock stuff anymore. So,
well, and absolutely, because what's going to happen is when those chassis become scarce, the price obviously is going to start going up on them. It's going to start getting harder and harder to find. So
they're hard to find. They're hard to find
now. Right.
So, you know, they're not easy to find. I was looking for one when I needed to reclip a car that I had a while back, and to find the thing, you know, I was had my cousin in Colorado looking for them, you know, in wrecking yards and stuff to try to find them. And when you find them, you want to try to find 8 or 10 of them and go get them all at once so you have them.
Mm-hmm.
And, because people need them, but so that's something else that they're, you know, talked about doing. But
well, and they could adapt, you know, something like with the fabricated front clip to maintain a lot of the stock locations and things like that.
Yeah, they can make a jig and make all those points fit, but it's I think part of the hesitation is there's a lot of stock clip cars out there, and to convert a stock clip car to, you know, there's you know, pros and cons of both sides of it.
Right. And again, it's a rule change. If you do allow, let's say, a fabricated front clip, and all of a sudden these fabricated front clips start running away with, you know, the
races,
races, then now you got a huge issue with a lot of stock clips that are out there.
We'll see. But eventually I think they'll have to figure
something
out and go that direction. But, you know, we'll see.
Absolutely. No, I agree. Do you think some of those changes over the years have made you grown fonder to the series, like to the asphalt modifieds, or do you think it's kind of pulling you away further than when you first got into it?
I think you have to keep up with the technology. I mean, there's, you know, technology can be a really good thing.
I mean, you had mentioned like back in the day with Donnie Williams and, you know, those days of racing at, let's say, LVMS, bump stops weren't a thing back then. They were just a conventional setups, but they were like, heavy springs setups and things like that, but bump stops weren't kind of the thing back then yet. So.
Right. Yeah, you know, and it's all, you know, racers, you know, they all push the envelope. That's part of the job.
Right.
You know, these chassis builders and suspension guys, and they look for the gray areas, and of course they want their stuff to be the fastest. So they keep developing this stuff. And, you know, there's times with my car, we run it on bumps. We've had bumps on all four corners. We've had bumps on the left rear and just on the front. We've had them just on the front. You know, we've played with it quite a bit. And now not only is there, you know, bump stops, now there's different kinds of bump stops.
Exactly.
So there's pucks, there's beehive stops. Then you have different color stops. So you have the blue stop, the red stop, the green stop, the black stop, and they're all different thicknesses.
Yep.
And then you end up
pucks with those.
You start cutting the beehive and putting half of a black one and half of a blue one, when the car's good on bumps, it's really good. I like it, but if it's off, it's a little difficult for me.
Do you think, let's say, you know, going from, let's say, a touring series like Lucas Oil Modifieds versus the just running one track, should let's say the track adapt maybe a no bump stop rule or a rule that changes a little bit?
I think that any track that's in the Lucas Oil Modified region
just
that
run the
doesn't
Lucas
run
rules.
The Lucas rules is foolish. And
just
the reason is because, you know, there's off weekends and there's guys who can, there's guys who can come to Vegas from California on an off weekend and run just because they want to try something and test and change it and support those shows. And something works with the Lucas Rules package because, you know, they have a touring series nowadays where there's, you know, 30 to 40 cars every week. Right. Something's right. You know?
Absolutely.
They're doing something right.
Yeah. You know, they the payoffs and the support from Lucas Oil and Greg Scheidecker and Bill Rozon and all the guys that are behind that series and the sponsors that they, you know, those guys go out and they work year round to make that series what it is. And, you know, last year we didn't really, I only ran one race in the series last year. And that was the last race at the Bullring. We ran the November race, but, I had some other stuff going on and needed to take a little bit of a break. And this year, hopefully we'll get to run as many as we can and see how that works out.
Is that the plan for you this year?
Fill us in on what's H-Town racing this year with the Lucas Oil Modified?
Tell us a little about H-Town, first of all. You know, I mean, is that something that you plan on bringing other cars in to try to help set up? Is it mostly you and then friends?
It's always been, the way those things started a long time ago is one time, I think it was me, my brother, and maybe Phil Goodwin. We're kind of sitting around and we're like, wow, this is when we had hobby stocks. And when Phil first started racing, and we started looking at it, we're like, wow, there's like 9 cars at Oliver and Henderson.
Right.
So we made these stickers up, and it said H-Town, and it had all their car numbers on them. And we just gave them to everybody, and that's, you know, it was just like all these guys from Henderson that are running this division. And that's kind of how the whole thing started. Mm. And then, you know, just kind of morphed into what me and my brothers did over the years. And now my brothers, you know, Jim was involved for a long time, and he's hasn't been involved so much the last few years. He's got a lot going on with his kids and sports, and my nephew plays football, and he's playing football at Gorman, and he's got a lot going on. And cool. My niece Cody is she's a senior in high school this year, and she was diagnosed with bone cancer the last she's probably been dealing with it for 6-7 months now. So she actually had to have surgery and have a bone removed out of her. It was on tumors on her rib cage. And so she's in her middle of going through chemo, and she's on a home school kind of program because she can't go to school. So he's, you know, got a lot on his plate.
Sure.
And my brother Joe is now a principal at one of the local high schools. He's a principal at Bonanza High School, and that's new for him this year. And he needed to kind of take a break back from it. So basically it's me again. And, you know, Tom Funstein has always been the last several years. He's, you know, been major supporter, not only at the racetrack, but off the racetrack, good friend and confidant, somebody I can rely on. And
sweet.
Him and I are, you know, still going strong. And Jeff Bagerhoff's still helping us. And
good
so
old
we,
Jeff.
We still have a group of guys, you know, and I still call my brother, and he calls and checks. And my dad always calls, and Jim wants to know what's going on. And my nephew.
Any of them say, hey, any chance I can get one of those cars this practice
now? Well, believe it or not, Joe's been around for I don't know how many years helping. He's never turned a lap in a car.
Wow.
Won't do it. We really? Told him, we'll build you a bomber. Nope, don't want nothing to do with it.
Jim, passenger seat, huh?
Yeah. Every now and again, Jim will say, hey, let's, you know, he kind of hints around, but, you know, I think he's just got so much going on in his own deal, you know, it's kind of not in the picture for him.
Sure.
But so our plans for this year, we're going to field we have 3 modifieds that we're going to run.
Nice.
We're going to run Doug Ham's actually driving one of our cars. He's driving a car for Tom this year.
That's cool.
We'll have it at Kern on February 11th.
Okay.
And it's number 9X this year. And the sponsor on it is Spray 9, which is a degreaser, multi-purpose cleaner kind of thing. So Doug's going to be driving the first time will be at Bakersfield at the Winter Showdown on February 11th, and it actually Spray 9 is the title sponsor for that race, so it's the Spray 950.
Cool.
We'll be there with Doug for sure in that race, and then Havasu, March 11th, we'll have my car and Doug's car both down there, and you know, and then all 3 of them, Tom, myself, and Doug, will all be running all the Bullring races. So,
cool.
You know, good. Tim is. Supports us and fights for us to have those shows locally, so we do everything in our power to go out there and run them. And you know, those shows are no joke either, because you know, a couple of years ago, we went to a local show. We went to two local shows in Colorado, one at CNS and one at I-25 Speedway with our car. We did fairly well at both and had one of the fastest cars both nights. And those are, you know, a local show. Here, you know, a local show is six Lucas cars, six or seven Lucas cars. And Chris has his cars out there and Doug. And you know, those are some of the fastest cars on the Lucas Oil Series, too. So, you know, it's not like a typical local kind of show. But and Tim, you know, Tim always has supported the modifieds. And so as long as he's running them, we'll do everything we can to support all those races. So,
have you raced one of the bigger tracks like Kern or Irwindale?
No, I ran Irwindale. Okay. I didn't run Kern. Last year was the first year they had a points race at Kern. Doug ran it in one of Chris's cars. I've run Irwindale several times. I'm not a big fan, to be honest with you.
You like the short track?
Well, you know, I like the Salt Lake's fast. It's fun. I like Salt Lake. I like the Bullring. I don't know about Kern. I haven't been on it yet. I don't have an opinion until I run there. I'm not a real big fan of Irwindale. It's a good facility. I like it. It's a great place to race. One of the nicest places on the West Coast. Some guys love it, some don't. You know, there's just some guys like the big tracks, some guys like the little dinky tracks. I've always had fun there. It's just the reason I don't like it is because I'm not very good there.
You always like to go back to where you won or where you run in front.
So I get a little bit braver and don't mind driving that thing in really deep at Irwindale, you know, it's a tough place.
You know, that brings up a good point because that would be kind of a deterrent for me, I would think, in a modified on a half-mile track. You're talking about speeds that – I don't know if these modifieds really are built for that. I mean, I think they are, but
the thing about it, on those big tracks, you know, it doesn't matter if it's a modified, a super late, or what it is. If you get in the wall at Irwindale or Kern and – you know, it's costing you a car pretty much.
That's the same as wrecking at Havasu, let's say.
That's not necessarily true. I saw Jason Patterson destroy a car one night in practice at Orange Show, and that's the smallest track we go to. You know, and when Jim Myers drove a car for us, he totaled it on Madera. He's getting in the wall. So, you know, you can do it anywhere. But the series is, you know, they're very aware how fast we're going on those big tracks. And Greg and those guys have implemented some stuff. And the guys are smart. And, you know, you don't see the same kind of racing with the Lucas Oil Modifieds at Irwindale as you do at Havasu. That's for sure. You know, you don't have guys bumping and banging and pushing each other out of the way. And
a little more respect.
They've changed some stuff. They let you run an aftermarket steel hub on the right front, some stuff like that.
Is that just for this?
You can run it. Well, you can run it all the time.
Okay.
But that got implemented because of those bigger tracks and stuff like that. So, you know, they're fun. And that's one of the good things about the Lucas Oil Modifieds is it's such a variety of tracks and it can appeal to a lot of different guys. So, like I said, they're doing something right. Our plans, we have, Chris Bro has been helping us a ton and partnered up and we're part of our team. So we're glad to be working with Chris and Doug and you know, Tom and Peyton Saxton's been around helping and all the guys that come around. So, you know, I've known Doug for a long time and he's a good guy and we have lots of fun and that's what it's supposed to be. So hopefully we'll have a lot of fun this year with, you know, Chris has made things a lot easier as far as chassis setup and stuff and helped me get the car I have now is actually a car Chris built a few years ago and helping me get that thing dialed in.
I ran it half of last season.
Okay. So I did run it the last half of last season. There's a few things we need to work on with it, but most of it is just fine tuning and adapting a little bit. But we're excited with Doug driving that's gives us a good outlook on the Lucas season. You can't beat having a guy like Doug driving a car.
And he's
going to
race
he's going to run the full season.
Because obviously the Lucas Oil Modified rules are, excuse me, the schedule is out. You can go to lucasoilmodifieds.com to find it there. But the full schedule is out for 2017. And you've picked and choosed picking shows some for you yet now?
No,
as they come up,
we're gonna start. We're gonna start off at Havasu and see how it goes.
And
take
just
one
wait
at a time, you know. We do well at Havasu, then it, you know, that makes it easier to go to Tucson. And
sure.
We do well at Tucson, it makes it easier to go to the next one.
Did they race Tucson last year?
Yeah, we've been at Tucson
for
the last few years.
Because I know they stopped for, obviously, because Tucson closed for a little while and then they reopened.
We've been
so.
Back at Tucson for probably maybe, I want to say 5 years.
Been that
5 years?
Where have I been?
At least, yeah.
You've been out of the scene, Mike.
Yeah. Well, I know they reopened because we did have the promoter from down in Tucson on one of the first shows, speaking of Tucson, but it was about 5 years ago, and they were just talking about opening up. So it was right around that same time, about close to 5 years
ago.
And glad to see them still going strong.
The Lucas schedule this year is pretty much identical to what it was last year. The dates are a little different, but, you know, they're back at, we go to Kern and Tucson and Irwindale again and Madera twice, Las Vegas twice, Havasu twice, you know,
right.
So all the...
I think the only tracks you go one time to is the Salt Lake, Rocky
RMR,
Mountain.
RMR, yeah, Rocky Mountain Race.
Right? Yeah.
Orange Show, Tucson.
Yeah, Orange Show.
And Irwindale, I think those are the only...
Well, we had a few seasons, we had two races at Irwindale, but it's been down to one
this
now. But
one. You got Kern, obviously, to make up
but,
for the other large track.
Yeah, and it's Spray 9 is doing a little... they're sponsoring like three of the races, I think, and I'm not exactly sure all the details, but I know Greg had talked about like a mini series within the Lucas series for Kern and a race at Madera maybe, and then the end of the year at the Bullring kind of thing. So I'm not exactly sure. I haven't seen the details on that, but they're constantly looking to do things for the teams so that's our plans are to hit it hard in February and have a blast doing it. That's what we're hoping to do. And you know, Tom makes most of it possible for all of us. So, you know, without his support, it'd be really hard for me or Doug or any of us to show up at the race.
Tom's going to run the Superstock this year?
No, we don't. Tom sold the Superstock.
No way.
Stock.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Superstock's gone.
Who got it? Anybody we know? Or?
No, it's actually an Orange Show car.
Oh, man, out of state.
But it's a guy who, Jimmy Martis, one of his crew guys.
Cool.
His name's Donnie Larson. He had a mini stock. He ran the Orange Show for a long time, and he was dying to get into a super stock. And we tried to run it last year, and it just got hard to try to support the super stocks and the modifieds. And some nights we had both cars racing, and it got difficult. So that's the decision Tom made.
Hey, speaking of Martis, is he going to be racing? Do you know?
He's running full time on the Lucas.
I know
he's
racing
year.
Orange Show.
Well,
on just about everything down there, I think.
Well,
he had a
Pinot, they ran at Orange Show and a modified, but I'm not exactly sure. I haven't seen Orange Show's schedule, but there was some talk that the Orange Show was not going to run the modifieds on a weekly basis this year. But I know Martis is going to be back on his plans are to run the Lucas Oil Series again. So
cool. That'll be good.
I think he was one of the ones that ran that 300 lap figure eight race down there in Orange Show.
I don't think
he ran the mini stock in that same night.
Well, he's run the mini stock, and then they had a 200 lap street stock race, and actually the first he drove the car Tom's super stock that we sold to Donnie. Martis actually drove it at Orange Show for that
the
big
race.
Super stock race, and he had quick time and he was running good. And that's a long race on a little track, and by the end of the night, I think we finished like third or something. I can't remember, but the car did not look the same. I'll tell you that.
New panels.
That's the nature of a 200 lap race at Orange Show.
At Orange Show,
But
that's funny.
Yeah, so this year, you know, we have Spray 9 on board helping us, which is good, and then you know all the support from Tom and then Finley Chevrolet is back on board with us again this year, and Jamal McCoy over there has been great supporter of us for years, and they continue to help us every year, and their support's invaluable and can't do it without them. And then the Painters Union District Council 15, they've been on for a couple years. We have Benesis who's helping us, Southern Nevada PDCA, the Painters and Drywall Carpenters Association.
And they're supporting H-Town, every car in
the Well, what we do is, for the most part, is like Spray 9 is Doug's primary sponsor on his car. But one of the things we try to do is, you know, if they're supporting us, we support them. So usually you'll see those logos on all cars,
right.
Not necessarily same size or same
right.
place or anything like that, but we try to you know, make sure we support them as a team.
Well, and let me tell you, Spray 9 could probably be a good seller for 99% of the bombers at the LVMS.
Yeah.
LV greasers.
Yeah, go to, they have a website with all their products on it. Go check them out. I know they sell product at Lowe's and a lot of the stores. So,
okay.
But anyway, and then we have, you know, I have Say Hello to My Little Smoker is going to be helping. That's a friend of mine. His name's Ben Morris. He does caters big events for barbecue.
Hey,
and,
a little barbecue, huh?
Yeah, and he helps me out every year. And then, you know, Justin and A First Impressions, you know, sign company, they help us as much as they can. And just the same core group of folks who always step up to the plate.
If somebody wants to get a hold of you, they can get a hold of you on Facebook? Or do you
have
yeah,
they can get a hold of me on Facebook
or
send me a message there. We always can use support. You know, the Lucas races are all televised. Some of them are live on Lucas Oil Racing TV. You can get a subscription to that web service, and they have the races live on there some nights. They're going to be on board my car this year, Lucas Oil Racing TV.
Really
so
cool.
So that'll be good for some of the races. So, you know, and then without Chris and Tom and Jeff and our core group that always supports us, you know, definitely couldn't get behind the wheel and go run. So I like to, you know, those guys without them, we couldn't do it, you know. And we have Dave Arce helping us with some motor stuff, which is good. And, you know, and then, of course, the most supportive person is my wife, who puts up with it all and lets
course,
me.
Right. Got to mention wife.
Yeah.
Lets me juggle the schedules around and
yep.
and my kids. You know, unfortunately, I do have to. Sometimes they have volleyball or have different things going on that I miss to go racing, and they're supportive of it, and I appreciate that. So,
how about any benefits or charities that you're going to be behind?
One of the things that the last few years that we've constantly tried to support is we had the bullying cause that we were supporting that kind of affected us a little bit with Tom had somebody that Tom worked with, his daughter who committed suicide due to a bullying a few years ago. She was 13 years older and it was Haley Joy Lambreth. And we run a sticker on our cars for her in support of that. Every year and try to do that. But, you know, we're open to, you know, we love doing things for charities. We've done stuff for Speedway Children's Charities. We do, you know, so if there's an opportunity that comes up, we'll be glad to do what we can. We've done a few events at Three Square this year with Tim and Dan Fitzgerald and some other bowling racers and stuff and volunteered. So, yeah, we like to give back to the community. So whatever presents itself, we'll be glad to jump on for sure.
Because you did, I think, it was your group, H-Town, that was doing racers for reading for racers. You were doing that for a little while.
We had Jim and Tom and my brother Joe kind of put this program together. It's called the Race to Success Reading Program. And it was in a bunch of the elementary schools when it was for fifth graders. And we'd actually go out there and it was a program that provided incentives to the kids to read. And they actually got tickets to the bowling and T-shirts and every book they read was, we called it a lap, and the teachers kept the track how many laps they completed throughout
cool.
the year. And
it was
a pretty intense program, and we'd love to start it again. We paid for that with sponsor money and had sponsors for that program, and Tom was big supporter of that. And then it just the cards haven't fell right to do it for a while. But we're open to any kind of charity thing we can do, we'll be involved as much as we can. So.
Cool.
Yeah, that's cool. You know, and speaking of charities, of course, the Laps for Charity out at the LVMS is coming up on the 29th. I don't know if you've ever done anything like that out there, or I haven't been on in and on that at all, but maybe this year I'll get
it. Do you know how many Laps for Charity I've done at the LVMS? I think in 20 years I've done quite a few charity laps.
Exactly. Well,
if we're making any money, for sure, so that would be for charity.
That is all charity, that's right. Hey, I want to bring up two real quick. At LVMS, this Friday is the last day to buy your tickets for the banquet. The banquet, of course, is January 28th this year, but you got to get tickets in advance. Are you going, Pat?
Yeah, we're doing
that table.
Yeah.
You want to make sure you get your tickets by this Friday, I believe it is the last day. So you know, hit Tim up, or there's a number, 702-632-8059. You can call to get the tickets in advance. The only way to get the tickets. So,
yep,
make sure.
Can't get them at the front door.
Okay. Hey, we got a caller real quick. So, bro, caller, who do we have?
Hey, this is Jeff Arterhoff. How you guys doing?
Hey, how you doing?
Hey,
hey, of course, you know, we got Pat here, so.
Yeah, no, listen to him. I just, two things. I wanted to let you guys know, I never had power brakes on my bomber. They're totally never needed. I did break down and get power steering, though, after wrestling those big cars down. It got to me. Hey, Pat, why don't you tell
Jeff, as much stuff as you hear with that bomber, I don't know if you have any brakes
on
that thing.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Do you need brakes?
No, you don't. You just use the other bomber for the brake. So that's how you slow your car down. So anyway, why don't you talk about the barn find of your dad's old race car up in Colorado?
Oh, well, what Jeff's talking about is there's a guy who my dad knew, was friends with for a long time in Colorado, and part of the racing community, recently passed away. And another one of my dad's friends had contacted us, and there was a car that this guy had in his barn that was my dad had ran in 1965, 66, somewhere in there. It was called a Jet Coupe at the time, but basically it was an upright, super-modified, home-built kind of super-modified car. V8 engine in it. It has a 1923 Model T body on it, on it. And,
oh, sweet.
And so what's left of it is pretty much the body and the frame and the chassis and stuff. So once this guy, gentleman's name was Mike Barney, and I remember him when I was a little kid, he had a tow truck, and he'd come by my dad's shop and take me for rides in his tow truck, and he was a good friend of my dad's. And so he had this car, and so we recently have acquired it.
Oh,
so
no kidding.
I get to go, I was going to go pick it up last weekend, but with the weather problems in Colorado, I didn't go. So my uncle is going to pick it up for me, and we're going to go get it and put it back together and restore it the best we can.
Kidding.
The only guy who's driven it that I know of is my dad. The last time he was on the racetrack is like 65 or 66. It's still painted blue with his number 12 on it. So he ran it. Yeah.
That's cool.
Wow.
Yeah,
so it's pretty cool.
You got enough pictures and memory enough to get it back to where it was?
My dad has told me every detail of this thing since we found out we had it. He knows.
Okay.
He knows it. Yeah. And then I got some pictures of it. My dad has some pictures of it. I told him, I said, now this isn't going to be like down the road a restoration project.
Right.
There's going to be some modern twist to this thing, but it'll be cool. So, yeah, we're just going to get it as a toy and put it together and, you know, maybe take it to some car shows or something like that.
You going to try to do a street legal thing?
No.
It's just nostalgia.
Yeah, it's just to have it because it was my dad's. So pretty cool to have
one
of my dad's original cars. And
that's great.
I had the guy, I was like, I need to come pick this car up. So I need the, you know, what do I need to bring it home, my trailer or whatever.
Right.
He's like, I'll measure it. So he calls me and he says, from front to back, it's 90 inches long.
Oh, wow.
That's 90 inches long. He goes, from door to door, it's 36 inches wide.
Okay.
And from top to bottom, it's 5 feet tall. And I'm like, this thing's like a size of a legend car. And you ran a V8 motor in this thing. My dad's like, yeah, they're like a 1,200-pound car.
No
like
kidding.
1,500-pound car with the V8 in them in the 60s. And,
that's nuts.
You know, he said, yeah, but the rear end's not in it. He said it had a homemade quick change. They didn't have quick change.
They built a quick change.
It had
that's crazy.
It had a homemade in and out box they built for it. Some guy machined in their garage. I don't know how they did. People way smarter than
I am
to come up with that stuff. So, yeah. So it'll be fun. You know,
Right. How lucky are we to just be able to call? You know, order something online or something. Back then they had to make. If we had a quick change, we got to make this quick change. It takes us about a month.
I don't know how they even thought of making this stuff. You know, I don't know how they came up with it, but they did. So,
hey Jeff, you still with us?
Yeah, I am. You know what? The thing that's really cool about it, you were talking about the homemade stuff, but the other thing too is I've seen pictures and all the numbers were painted on everything, like the
right.
You know, we use decals now, sponsors. Everything on those cars back then was all hand painted. And it's a really pretty cool car. I just wanted to
remember
one of you guys is going to ask Pat how in the heck he's going to be able to get into that car once we get it fixed.
Well, you just asked that question. So, Pat.
Well, I've asked you that question before. So,
the inside of the modified is not that big. And I can climb
in.
So I'll figure out a way. I've driven a Pinto before, a mini stock. I've driven a Thunder Roadster. I actually did sit in a Dorf car one time. I was going to drive it Pahrump, but it rained out.
Wow.
So, and I did get in it. I don't know how I'd have gotten out of it if I had to, but I did get in.
Stalls off.
So,
I got into a Dorf. Okay, that took 5 minutes, and then it was 20 minutes to get out of it.
To get out, right?
And Peyton Saxton has some legend cars, has been helping us and been around the shop a little bit. He swears up and down that if I wanted to, they could fit me in a legend, but I'm not going to even try.
Not that brave.
I don't, you know, I'm a little claustrophobic nowadays. When I'm bigger than the car, it is not going to happen.
So I think
when your shoulder is on the left side door
hanging
bars,
outside the window,
and your right shoulder is on the right side door bars, that's not a good thing.
Yeah, when they have to build the chassis around you, probably not a good thing.
Yeah.
Hey, one thing they probably will build for you for this car is a bigger shoehorn to get you in to get you in.
Well, one thing is, you know, my dad, when he's a big guy, and you know, so he got in it. He's 6'5", 6'4", 6'5", so he fit in it at one time. So, you know, I'll have to make sure that I can fit in.
Well, make sure when you get it done, you take it out to the bull ring and make some laps.
Gas and brake pedal may be past the front axle, but
it'll be cool when we get it. So
cool, man.
Looking
That's
forward
great.
To it.
That's really great nostalgia right there, man. Something that your dad drove and come up 1965, 66. That's great.
Yeah, I'm sure when we start putting it together, I'm going to have Chris, Chris Bray. You know, he's a great fabricator, and we're going to have to be making some homemade parts for sure. So I'm going to
I can see you guys going, Chris Bray taking a look at this and say, hey, I can get this on our cars. this is unique.
We'll have to have Chris hand build some stuff. So he's good at it. So I'm sure he can figure it out.
Right.
So.
Hey, Jeff, sorry we didn't get you the answer you were looking for that. But hey, appreciate you being on the show. If you're still there, Jeff.
Yeah, I'm still here. I'll see you guys out at the track. Good show. Thanks. And I'll just, let you guys know. I think you've got to wrap up here soon, too.
Yep, we are. We're running out of time as usual. Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate you calling in. And we didn't get the answer for you, but I'm sure we'll see what happens when this car's done. So
come on, Jeff. Get back in a bomber again, will you?
Well, I can tell you this. If I had my way and I get this car done, the first person to ever start it and take a lap in it's going to be my dad if I can get that worked
Absolutely.
Out. So.
That'd be great.
We'd
like to know about it. Please let us know when that's going to happen there.
Well,
you're getting close to it.
Yeah, if that ever happens, you'll know right away because there'll be some crazy old man going, probably running 15-second lap times in this, you know, 70-year-old car at the bullring.
He can run it as a bomber. Let's get out there with you guys, right?
So, by my way, that's what we'll do, but we'll see.
Bring it out for the open comp.
Yeah.
Cool. Hey, go ahead and if you can recap your sponsors and stuff like that. Do we got only a couple?
Sure. I thought, you know, we have Spray9 on board with us this year, and Phil's Fabrication, Chris Bray, Southern Nevada PDCA, FCA, Finley Chevrolet. Say hello to my little smoker, Benesis, Painters District 15. Hope I'm not forgetting anybody, but we have, you know, a ton of support. And like I said, we couldn't do it without Tom and Chris and the support we have at the shop now. And I, you know, I would never be where I am today either if it wasn't for my brothers helping me, even though they haven't been as evolved if they weren't, you know, I'm thankful I have all that. So.
Well, appreciate it. Of course, we're out of time again, as usual. We could go another hour, but we don't have that time, that luxury. So, but thank you, Pat. We're going to be looking for you at the racetrack with Lucas Oil Modifieds and your team, and also out at LVMS. Go to LVMS.com. Check it out there. You can find us live next Tuesday at 6 p.m. at onwheelsnow.com. Thanks for joining us tonight. Thank you, Pat, for being here, man.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for coming in, Pat. Have a good night.
Thanks for coming in, Pat. Good listening.